Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Hey, Sid, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
I'm a little worn out, you know, from the Greek festival and everything.
Yeah, we went to the Greek festival. It was fun, but man, oh man, it was an exhausting time.
It was hot.
It was hot, too, and there's long lines.
Long lines for food.
This is not related.
This is not related at all. It's just you asked how I was, and they did have baklava sundaes. Which were interesting and good.
And interesting and good.
Interesting
is the review.
And good.
Comes the review from Sydney. I don't know if you all noticed, but about a couple of weeks back there, pneumonia was in the news.
Well, it was like last week. Honey.
It was like last week. Gosh.
It wasn't that long ago.
I'm sorry. I'm still shooting this show and I've lost all touch with reality. But I have heard that pneumonia was in the news recently.
That's right. One of our political candidates, one of our presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton, committed the horrible sin of getting sick.
Getting pneumonia.
Which obviously, if you're going to run for a public office, you can never get sick.
Ever.
Ever. Certainly not pneumonia, which it seems like a lot of people are not quite clear on.
Yeah, it's one of those that, you know what, I'll be completely honest. I think even, I realize that I don't have a great understanding of what pneumonia is. And judging by the reaction last week, a lot of other people don't either. So we thought we'd talk about it so we could all have a real good understanding of what pneumonia is.
And I think it's a good, not just because it was in the news, but it's a good thing to talk about because chances are you either know someone or personally have had pneumonia in your life or will someday. It's really common. Justin, I've had pneumonia. Did you know that?
Oh, gosh, Sydney, how could you reveal something like this to me on air?
I'll never be president.
How far back does this go? Is this one we've recognized fairly recently?
No, not at all. But first of all, let me thank a few people, Amy, Starla, and Krista, for all recommending this topic. And again, I know a lot of people have also tweeted about it and Facebooked us about it as well because it was in the news. So thank you all. I hope that this helps.
I should mention real quick, in case you're worried, if you've had a belly full of political nonsense, that this is not what this episode is about. It's just a convenient place to hang that.
Yeah, no, this episode's about pneumonia. I would not call healthy political discourse nonsense.
No, I don't think.
But this is not the show for it.
If you've been getting healthy political discourse, please let me know where you're scooping that up because it's not in abundance.
You should talk to your wife more.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
Blew your mind. Okay. I'll give you $5 to talk about pneumonia.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of things about it. So here
we go. For it.
Hippocrates wrote about pneumonia. So we have known about it a long time, but it was also mentioned when Hippocrates wrote about it that it has been written about by the ancients. So whoever Hippocrates considered the ancients were also writing about pneumonia.
Yeah, who he thought were very old.
Yes,
old
the
people.
Ancients to him, which he would be ancient to us. So our grand ancients.
The grand ancients.
So it's been around a really long time, and I would imagine that that's because as long as there have been lungs, which is the organ that we're focusing on here. Mm-hmm. And as long as there have been bacteria or viruses or fungi, there has been pneumonia. The two would meet. It was inevitable. And so there will be lung infections. So that to start with, that's the most important thing to know. That is what pneumonia is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lung infection.
Yes. I think for some reason I thought it was just like fluid in the lungs, but it's not just that, right?
No. Pneumonia references some sort of infectious process in the lungs. There could be fluid involved.
Okay.
But that's not necessarily true. And it can be caused by a lot of different organisms. When we say pneumonia, we just mean you have a lung infection. It could be a bacteria. It could be a virus. Like I said, it could be a fungus. A lot of different things can cause lung infections. Pneumonia just means there's an infection of your lung. Now, I will say, though, Justin, the idea that pneumonia references fluid in the lungs, you're not alone in that belief.
Okay.
That is part of the reason when you start reading about the history of pneumonia and how we used to treat it, it gets really difficult because terms got really confusing. As you can imagine, we didn't know what infection was, so we certainly didn't understand what the cause of pneumonia was. So a lot of stuff got mixed in together. For instance, if you had fluid in your lungs, we may have called it pneumonia.
A long time ago.
When we start reading about the history of pneumonia, there's lots of different words that might have been used, and they actually meant pneumonia.
So when you say I'm not alone in my belief that it was fluid in the lungs, you mean it's me and some old dudes from a billion years ago who didn't have access to any scientific tools whatsoever.
Right, exactly.
Got it.
So you're in great company. Excellent. Well, I mean, Hippocrates.
Yeah, I mean, it's just me and Hippocrates. That's true. That's fair.
There were words that you will find pop up throughout writings, like perinemonia or perinemone or pleuresis. All of these things may have been referencing pneumonia. They may have been referencing pleurisy, like an inflammation of the lungs, or a pleural effusion, like fluid in the lungs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could even be asthma. Asthma was kind of a catch-all term for a lot of different lung disorders. So it may mean asthma. It may mean pneumonia. If they say pneumonia, they may mean asthma. So all of this would have been mixed in together. Mm-hmm. So to differentiate how exactly they treated pneumonia versus pleurisy or some other lung problem would get really tricky. One suggestion that Hippocrates had is that if they were still alive, because most of the time this was more of an academic debate afterwards, like, what do you think they had?
Because they didn't have the tools, right?
Right. And because pneumonia back this long ago would have been very, very serious and often fatal. So a lot of the times this was more of like an academic debate as opposed to any practical application.
Right.
But if they were still alive, you could try to diagnose them by shaking them.
And you just hear they sloshed?
If you heard pus rattling around in their lungs, then you thought maybe that was pneumonia that they were about to die from, because you really didn't. It was really more like a topic of conversation for the funeral.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to actually, you know,
not
changing.
Not a fun topic of conversation. No. Really, like, you could probably do better.
And there weren't a lot of autopsies back then, so we didn't really know. And
you would be at a funeral, and you'd be like, here's a fun guess as to why I think I killed him. I was shaking them earlier, and I think it might have been pneumonia, but it's impossible to say. Anyway, did you try the deviled eggs? They're delicious.
That's pretty much how it would have gone.
Yeah,
if they had deviled eggs back then, which I don't know. I'm not an authority on deviled eggs or the foods of ancient Greece.
Fair enough.
If you had fever, pain in your side, and your sputum was blonde and frothy, then that was usually a bad sign. They knew that.
Yeah.
But it really didn't matter what you had, because they were going to treat it all the same way. Hippocrates' favorite treatment for everything was rest, exercise, a healthy diet, plenty of sleep, and good hygiene.
I mean, he's not wrong a lot of the time.
Sure. It's not going to fix pneumonia. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll get into, there are different kinds of pneumonia, and sometimes there's not much to do but wait for it to get better.
Okay.
Which is why, like, not everybody died of pneumonia always.
Because some people exercised.
Some people just got better.
Oh, fair.
But if that wasn't working, some things that you would have tried, again, for just anything that may have been thought to be pneumonia or any other lung problem. Mm-hmm. Bleeding, of course.
Sure.
Obviously. Yeah, if there's anything wrong with you, let's just cut you open and let some blood out and see if that fixes it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best historical treatment. If you have a fever, an enema was thought to be particularly helpful.
Sure. That's a real natural choice.
Right. Because you've already got pneumonia. Why not also give you an enema?
Let's see where else we can get liquid.
Yeah.
Great.
Just, you know, and a lot of this too, we go back to like the humors. We're trying to balance out your four humors. So that's why we would, if you think about like, why were they bleeding people and making people poop and puke and all that. That's
because there's something in there that we, yeah.
Yes, let's just balance the humors. If there was pain in your chest, they thought like a hot water bottle or a sponge of hot water or a lot of different things would be applied to the chest that were thought to be warming to the chest, like something with linseed in it. Something to warm the chest was thought to be good for pneumonia because pneumonia was thought something cold.
It's just kind of symptomatic treatment than
exactly. Yeah. Well, symptomatic, but also we never understood. We had no idea what was happening inside the chest. So maybe it fixes it.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
A symptom getting better would have been seen as the disease getting better.
True.
If you think about it.
True.
There were all kinds of things like honey and pine fruit that were suggested. You know, different kind of herbal remedies. There was something called Oxymel we've talked about before. Do you remember that? It was in our vinegar episode, honey and vinegar.
Right.
That you could put something called Southernwood in the Oxymel, mix that together and give that to somebody. There was a specific bitter resin called Apoponix.
Well, no, what is that?
It's just a kind of plant resin that was very bitter, had a garlicky taste. You would mix that with some Oxymel, so that was some honey and vinegar.
This is a killer dressing so far.
These would all be tasty on salads or on your chest. Should you have pneumonia?
Also, I'm pretty sure I said that when we talked about Oxymel initially. And if so, forgive me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll forgive you. I don't know. The listeners, that's a whole other thing. He also noted that if you, and this, these are, a lot of these come from Hippocrates and from his Greek contemporaries, that you could tell if things weren't going well if the patient stopped peeing. That was a bad sign.
Yeah.
And if they were peeing a lot, that was a good sign.
Okay. I mean,
I don't know what you do with that information. Yeah, like
if anybody stops peeing, that's probably a bad sign.
Yes. No, that's true. That's true. And a lot of this is kind of strange because he also noted, like, by the way, you're probably going to die in like 7 days. So if you don't die in 7 days, you're probably through the woods.
Yeah.
If you do, like.
You die, we're all done here.
Right. Which is a weird position. Like, it makes me think that for a while, physicians were more just like predictors of death as opposed to people who actually did anything to stave it off.
Yeah, they're just running the numbers. There's a weird sort of logic thing in there of like, if I wait long enough, I will have fixed you or you won't be my problem anymore. So it's really a no-lose scenario for me.
And there was a lot of debate at this point because pneumonia was seen as such a serious disease. If someone had it, should you even try all these things? There was even a recognition back then of some sense of like palliative care, meaning things to just make the patient more comfortable. Sometimes that was the way to go, was like, listen, we know we're not going to be able to do anything for this. So just like, you know, give them some opium.
Yeah.
Once we had that, wine, that was often recommended, wine. Were added to the list of cures. Galen was one of the first ones to distinguish pneumonia from pleurisy, to actually start to kind of tease out these different
lung
problems. Well, just like an infection versus an inflammation.
Got it.
Kind of thing. But it didn't really matter because he just said you do the same thing that Hippocrates said.
Man, it must have been good on them. Differentiating an infection from inflammation in those times must have been... Mm-hmm. Quite the feat.
Specifically, infection of the lung tissue versus inflammation of the pleural lining, like kind of the lining of the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very hard to tease out. And a lot of this was interesting.
Especially when you don't even understand what infection is.
Yeah. But a lot of this, it's interesting too, because he was able to tease that out. And that was without any kind of, obviously, imaging to do it.
Sure.
So just based on physical exam kind of findings. But again, I don't know why these things back then, there was no like attempt to try to treat it differently. In the 1100s, we started to really hone in on the symptoms that were specific to pneumonia. So like we move past something's going on in your chestal region.
Yeah. This zone right here,
this chest zone, something bad is happening. I don't know. Put a leech on it. We start to say, look, if they're coughing, if they're breathing fast, if they're short of breath, this probably means that they have pneumonia, but still it was more of like a, so call the coroner.
Yeah. Or don't. It's hard to say.
If it's been a week.
This isn't my problem is what I'm saying.
It's interesting because that week, that 7 day cutoff, I wonder if that has to do with the fact that, and I'll tell patients this a lot of viruses, after a week, you can tell that it was a viral illness, because in the beginning, the symptoms are very similar. But after about a week, you're probably going to be getting better.
Right.
Right. So like if it's a virus, it's 7 to 10 days is what we'll tell people. Most viruses last about that long. So after 7 days, you should say, yeah, I feel a little better. Maybe not 100%, but yeah, I feel a little better than yesterday. A bacterial illness, that's not necessarily true for. After 7 days, you may feel just as bad or even worse. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of a loose cutoff if you're trying to figure out what might be causing a problem. So I wonder if that's where that 7 days came from, is if it was viral after 7 days, your patient probably looks like they're not going to die.
Yeah.
If it was bacterial, maybe not. Yeah. Back in the 1400s, a lot of pneumonia would have been just blamed on, like, evil things.
Sure.
Or, like, bad behavior.
Man, things always get better. Just when we start climbing back.
There were, like, evil spirits in the air that you breathed in. Middle or, like, ages. Bad smells. Remember, we've talked about before, the idea that, like, bad smells or bad things in the air you can breathe in and those make you sick. Cupping would have been a popular treatment at this point, which we've talked about before. Like, applying suction in a cup.
That great effective treatment.
That was very popular at this time. Again, we're still kind of basing it on like a humoral, like move the humors around kind of thought.
Especially, but nowadays, it's not that anymore. Nowadays, it's scientific.
Nowadays it's because it helps you swim fast.
Yeah.
Back then it was to pull the pus out of your chest or something.
Yeah. So it didn't work back then, but it does now.
No. Mustard plasters became common at this point, which would just be like mustard seeds, like kind of smashed inside some sort of like a dressing material and then put on your chest.
Usually wait, mustard warm. Seeds smashed inside a dressing?
No, like
what is with you in salad today?
I don't mean like dressing like on a salad. I mean like a wound dressing. Like something that you would put on, you know, like
sure. So maybe fabric, honey,
some sort of
mustard.
Oh, not
dressing, and then you're just good to go.
And then you're good. And then you need some chicken tenders.
Oh no, your salad broke bad.
Can we go to Arby's later?
Yeah. What? No. Ew.
I really like their honey mustard.
I've not sampled it. What are we doing?
I don't want to put it on my chest.
More science.
Up until the 1600s, a lot of deaths that were blamed on something like plague were probably actually pneumonia, because one fact about pneumonia we didn't talk about is that who gets pneumonia? Well, anyone can. But the people who are at the biggest risk for it are either
elderly or kids.
Yes, exactly. Which is true for a lot of different illnesses. But also if you have any kind of chronic illness, mm-hmm. like lung problems or heart problems, or anything that would affect your immune system. And then also if you've just had some sort of illness, you're at greater risk for pneumonia. Mm-hmm. So if you just were recovering from the plague and you've been super sick, you may be at risk at that point to get pneumonia. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the flu. That can happen after influenza epidemics throughout history. We probably had a lot more pneumonias. Mm-hmm. Anything that would have made you sick, you would have been more likely to get pneumonia afterwards. Mm-hmm. So also after surgery, but we weren't doing surgeries back then. We'll get to that. So, but it really didn't matter what it was. I mean, the fact that they thought it was plague, well, whatever. They were just bleeding everybody.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Their treatment didn't vary. So
yeah, really they could have named it anything.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a leech on your chest one way or another. So
why waste time discussing it?
Exactly.
Well, okay, Sid. So I feel a breakthrough coming. I feel like we're getting close to maybe understanding something at all.
Yes.
About pneumonia. So hit me.
There's a light at the end of this lung tunnel. But first, we got to head through the billing department.
Let's go. You know, sometimes I waste too much time thinking. Thought is the root of all suffering. You know, I that's something that I've heard that I think there's a lot of truth in. So why don't we try let go of thought and get into action, right? Get your project in front of you and start building a website for it with Squarespace. Squarespace is a fantastic tool for creating your website because, first of all, you can start building out these ideas in a way that lets you visualize them, right? I'm not a thinker that thinks in words. I have to think in images. So with a Squarespace website, you're able to start taking that idea out of your brain and putting it in front of you. And it's going to look great because the templates you're going to be using are made by world-class designers, some of the best in the biz. And if you're having trouble with any of the stuff that you're doing with your Squarespace website, they have incredible support that's there to have your back every step of the way. And with a Squarespace website, you can't just like share information. You can really kind of do anything with these websites. You can sell products, calendars, just keeping in touch, whatever.
The Squarespace tools are incredibly powerful and flexible, and well worth checking out. Head to squarespace.com/sawbones for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code sawbones to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. You got so much to take care of. Spring's right around the corner. You're busy. You're cleaning up. You're getting your life back in order. You're getting ready to emerge like from your chrysalis, like a beautiful butterfly. You don't have time to slave away in the kitchen. You don't have time to waste a bunch of time cooking dinner that you don't have time to do. You got to get out there, but you still got to feel your body. Give it the delicious, fresh stuff that it craves, right? Well, good news, because there's Factor. These meals are always fresh, never frozen, and they're ready to eat in about 2 minutes. You don't have to prep them. No prep, no stress. Slap them in the microwave, heat them up, and they're going to be delicious. Not like the microwave meals you remember from when you were a kid, kind of grody. These are nice. These are designed by dietitians. They're crafted by chefs. So you're going to eat well. You're going to eat in a way that sustains you and makes you happy. And it's not going to take a lot of your time. Head to factormeals.com/sawbones50off and use code sawbones50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan. One free breakfast item per box, one for 1 year while subscription is active.
So said, let's fix pneumonia together.
We're almost there. So we have moved on to the 1700s. We've, like I said, we are somewhat better at distinguishing pneumonia from other lung problems, but we're not necessarily better at treating it, with bleeding still being the mainstay. Now, the one thing that was interestingly added in the 1700s was called Huxham's tincture. This was by Dr. John Huxham. And this was a mixture of the cinchona bark, which we talked about before.
Use malaria. It quinine.
Yeah, because it's got quinine malaria in it. So the thought process that, oh, it's good for other things. You know,
maybe this is medicine.
This works for something.
Is this medicine? This is medicine.
It was back in the time where, like, this worked for a fever. So yeah, this works for fevers, maybe.
Maybe.
It also contained bitter orange peel, some serpentary root, saffron, and it was all mixed in some sort of spirit, of course.
Natch.
Obviously.
Always got to have, like, an effect of some sort.
I think that's when you look at a lot of these kind of old medicines, like things like a guy's name, tincture. It could have been a gal's name as well. Just often was a guy's name. Mm-hmm. Their tincture, their tonic, or their whatever. It usually was mixed in whiskey or rum. Or
sure, because at least then it felt like you were having an effect.
Exactly. I feel all warm inside. This was used for years, along with bleeding. We were still bleeding people. But you would also say, but maybe go get some Huxham's tincture. I wonder, when you see in, like, old movies, somebody who has to, like, travel, like, we got to get to the pharmacist because little Billy's sick with pneumonia, and so we got to ride. He's got the fever
all night,
so
just to go get some.
I wonder if this is the kind of thing they were getting. Yeah. This would have been that kind of medicine. In the late 1800s, pneumonia at this point has been declared the most fatal of all acute diseases by William Osler. This was a big deal at this point. We knew there was an entity called pneumonia. We distinguished it from all these other lung problems. We were trying to figure out, how can we treat all this stuff? How can we keep people alive? Pneumonia was still eluding us. Mm-hmm. By now, bleeding is beginning to fall out of favor as the mainstay of treatment for pneumonia. But it's being replaced by things that aren't necessarily more helpful. Just cathartics, things to make you puke and pee also,
yeah.
And laxatives. So like mercury as a laxative, antimony for vomiting. Cupping, of course, is still being used. And then they also start blistering the chest at this point.
Ugh.
So to try to draw out whatever is inside, we'll blister. And this was, again, used for other sorts of, like, what we now understand are infectious processes to draw something out. The only thing I can say is that at least we had opium by now. So
made it a little more comfortable, at least.
Yes, a little less painful while we were blistering your chest and making you poop with as much mercury as we could get in you. This is actually a lot of these treatments I read about because Stonewall Jackson went through all this.
Really?
He was shot and then went through an amputation and then developed pneumonia afterwards and became quite sick. And then all of these things happened.
Right.
And then he passed away.
Rough putt there at the end for old Stonewall.
In the 1800s, pneumonia was, as I mentioned, it was very common. It was the third leading cause of death, but it was often called the old man's friend because it was also considered, outside of the treatments, a fairly painless way to go.
Well, that's charming. Come with me, old friend. It's me, pneumonia. I'm here to whisk you. Oh, thank you so much. No, it's no problem. Come along. Oh, that's so nice.
One of the, smooth. I mean, it's better than dysentery, I guess.
It's better than dysentery, reads the Cindy McElroy, the Greek festival at the Greek festival's baklava sundae. Better than dysentery, good and interesting.
This is why I can never work on a campaign staff. Yeah. What's our new campaign slogan? Better than dysentery.
Be the worst one I've heard.
One of the less offensive treatments for pneumonia that came around in the 1800s was something called a pneumonia jacket.
Okay.
You can look at pictures of these. They're easy to find, but they were these little like warm jackets that you would have like tied on or fastened on that were made of like muslin or oiled silk to keep your chest warm. Again, the idea was like, I don't know, maybe if we keep their chest really warm, it'll be better.
Maybe.
Sometimes they would even have little systems of like rubber tubing inside that you could run warm water through.
Oh, that sounds nice.
To keep the chest really warm.
Sounds really soothing.
Again, they might not have helped very much, but they probably weren't. They're probably kind of comfy.
Mm-hmm.
They look comfy. They look cozy. There's some cute little ones you can find, like, for kids.
Lots of kicky, funky colors. And
no, not
fun
really.
Fun designs. They got some elephants and giraffes on them for the kids.
Not so much. No. They were the 1800s, so, like, everything's kind of tan.
Yeah, just that general
that
tan.
That beige kind of color. We began to understand that there were different kinds of pneumonia and what may have been happening in them in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. A lot of this, I kind of already alluded to this, is that the influenza outbreaks led to lots more cases of pneumonia because people were sick and then they got pneumonia. And so we were able to kind of investigate all these people. Pasteur, Louis Pasteur, was actually instrumental in this. He began to isolate some sort of bacteria, a pneumococcus, as he called it, in the saliva and in the fluid from the lungs of patients who had pneumonia. Other physicians were doing this as well, or other scientists. He wasn't the only one who found this. But it wasn't until 1875, Edwin Klebs actually put that together, that this little bug, this bacteria that we're seeing, has something to do with the pneumonia, that mm-hmm. it actually is like the causative agent of pneumonia. That's when mm-hmm. we finally figure that out. From there, we see two other scientists, Carl Friedlander and Hans Christian Gram of the Gram Stain.
Whoa, big name.
This is a big guy. Gram of Stain fame. started working together in a hospital in Berlin, actually in their morgue, and they started to identify other specific types of bacteria that were causing pneumonia in different patients. So in 1882, we found a bacteria called Streptococcus pneumoniae.
Strep throat, right?
Well, no.
No?
No, it's one that causes pneumonia.
What streptococcus is strep
well,
throat, right?
Well, there is, okay, so there is a whole family of streptococcus.
Okay.
So there are...
Cool family.
Yeah, and there are different groups in them. There's group A and group B and group C. And anyway, group A streps cause strep throat.
It's not strep throat. Streptococcus pneumonia is not strep throat.
Yes, I mean, if you had an infection in your throat, from streptococcus pneumonia, that would be strep throat.
Great. So I was both right and wrong simultaneously. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, you're right. You're right. Yes. This just, we're talking about a different thing.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you with my attempt to tie to some small crevice
well,
of medical knowledge on my part.
No, it's important to know that, like, when we say streptococcus, that's a whole genus.
Okay.
Right. Do you understand right. that?
Yeah, I know genuses.
Okay.
I may not be a genius, but I know genus.
Oh, boy.
That was a pun.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pretty good boy. Pun. Somebody write that down.
Uh-huh. In 1884, we figured out Klebsiella pneumoniae as well.
It's a genius.
Different causative agent of pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured out that there are some pneumonias that are caused by bacteria, which is groovy. Like, we have put that together now.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're still in the 1800s and then early 1900s.
So we have no idea.
What do we do with that? We still don't know what to do. Osler did come up with the idea of giving people with pneumonia oxygen, which was a good plan, because mm-hmm. if they didn't have enough, giving them more would help keep them alive
mm-hmm.
through the pneumonia, if they survived the pneumonia. but it really isn't until, you probably know where this is headed,
the 40s.
Good old Fleming and his penicillin in the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And the antibiotic era is really what changed things. That's what changed the game for pneumonia. Once we were able to treat bacterial pneumonias, and of course, we probably would have thrown antibiotics at everything that was pneumonia, not knowing the difference between virus and bacteria and, or what caused what back then. But we actually started to see the mortality from pneumonia turn around at this point in history.
Good. Good job, Fleming.
So, and then in 1977, we get the pneumonia vaccine.
That's a thing? Did I get that?
Well, as kids, since the year 2000, we've had one for kids, but not back in 77, the Pneumovax was the first one to come out.
Have I been vaccinated?
You have. I'm pretty sure you haven't.
Well, come on.
Well, there's no indication to vaccinate you right now.
Why?
You don't have any of the risk factors. Okay, so not everybody will get the pneumonia vaccine at the same time.
Okay.
It depends on chronic illnesses you might have, or other like behavioral factors, or if you have a compromised immune system, that kind of thing.
Is it so, because my risk factors for pneumonia are low enough, should I get it, that it's contraindicated?
Well, it's not contraindicated. It's just you are not the at a higher risk population.
Okay.
You are not in that population.
That makes sense.
So everybody does get a pneumonia shot at 65 if you have not gotten it already for some other reason.
Right.
But then you're probably going to get a booster at 65 anyway.
Okay.
And then kids get the Prevnar. And now,
Prevnar.
Since 2010, we're expanding the use of the Prevnar actually to adults as well. So depending on if they have certain illnesses or, you know. So not everybody gets these. So it is a good thing, I will say this, to inquire of your doctor. Am I someone who needs this?
Right.
Because they'll know. and it's a good reminder to say, oh, you know what? Actually, for instance, if you smoke, you may be eligible for a pneumonia vaccine. So it's a good thing to ask your doctor, am I somebody who needs one? Not everybody does. So if they say you don't, they're not lying. You don't. I have not had a pneumonia vaccine. But kids get them now. So most people younger than us are going to have had them. They're just too old.
Like as if they need another advantage.
We're just too old. We missed it. Now, currently, like I said, not only do we live in the antibiotic era, where we have multiple different antibiotics that can treat, there are many, many different kinds of bacteria and viruses. And like I said, even fungal organisms that can cause pneumonia. Mm-hmm. But again, we have two different vaccines that if you are eligible for, if you are someone who should be getting these vaccines, you absolutely should get these vaccines,
right,
which is why you should ask your doctor if you need them. It is most often treatable, so it is not, you know, it is not nearly the death sentence that we thought it was, you know, thousands of years ago.
Right.
Now we expect that we should be able to treat most kinds of pneumonia. Anyone can get pneumonia. Of course, we talked about specific populations that are at higher risk, but again, like I mentioned, I had pneumonia.
Sure.
When I was a young, healthy college student, I got what you probably have heard referred to as walking pneumonia.
And the boogie-woogie flu. That's the other one, right?
I never got that.
No boogie-woogie flu.
but walking pneumonia, just meaning that it's a pneumonia, but you can usually still kind of function with it. Like you're sick, but you could, like me, drag yourself to class if you really need to. Mm. It's also called mycoplasma pneumonia, but that's fairly common, actually.
Okay.
So, and it's treatable with antibiotics. It is an acute illness, not a chronic one. Now, there are people who have certain illnesses that put them at risk for getting pneumonia multiple times throughout their life. But pneumonia, the infection of the lung, is an acute problem.
Which means it can be cured and over and done with.
Exactly. It is not something that you carry with you forever. So, like, for instance, getting pneumonia does not mean that you were hiding some sort of medical issue from people that you had.
It just means you got pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. It's not particularly contagious, depending on what caused it. Once you have, let's say you have a bacterial pneumonia that's infecting one lobe of your lungs. At that point, I mean, obviously you don't want to spit in anybody's mouth, but like you should never do that. And
sure,
we should all wash our hands. But being in the room with someone who has pneumonia most of the time is not an incredibly risky thing to do. Now, if you got pneumonia because of some sort of viral upper respiratory infection that weakened your immune system, or because you had the flu first or something like that, those things are all contagious, of course. And obviously, you know, if we're coughing on each other and not washing our hands and sharing food and drink and all that kind of stuff, puts you at higher risk. But I mean, in general, like the idea that being in the room with someone pneumonia is going to give you pneumonia is not, that's not really well founded.
Okay.
And again, having pneumonia, I would not think should make anyone less qualified to hold any position in government, because like we'll make them better and then they will no longer have pneumonia. And again, like I had it.
Yeah. And if Citi can get it, she's strong as an ox.
Well, right. Exactly. And I should still be president someday. And remember, like our early presidents, the majority of them had things like smallpox and dysentery and typhoid. And we all voted for those guys. So, well, somebody did.
Somebody did.
Somebody voted for them and they were fine. And like FDR had polio. And so, JFK had Addison's disease.
Sure.
And they did a pretty good job, I think. Fine.
They did okay.
So everybody chill out about pneumonia is what I'm trying to say.
Just chill.
Get vaccinated. If you go talk to your doctor, if you are somebody who should, you should get vaccinated. If you are eligible for it, go ask them about it. And of course, it's always important to take proper precautions. And, you know, if you are sick, you need to rest. A lot of these illnesses do require like to take a day off. And, you know, the thing is, some people are just really tough and devoted and work really hard and just don't want to let anything stand in their way. And so maybe they just try to work right through a sickness, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's all it is.
Maybe that's
maybe
all it is.
Maybe they're just that tough.
Okay. Folks, that's
just
gonna,
that
that's
going
to do it for us here on Sawbones. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use your song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thank you to the Maximum Fun Network for having us as a part of their extended podcasting family. There's a ton of great shows you can enjoy over there at MaximumFun.org. That's going to do it for us. Sorry that the episode was a little late this week. This TV thing has just been just a lot of time. But
it's so hard to be famous.
All right. Get bent. it'll be over next weekend, and then we'll be back on a regular schedule. But until then, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.